Oh, was that your countdown?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, here we go.
I'll do it again. 3, 2, 1. There you go.
Tech Show!
Who's the best show here?
Tech Show!
All right, that's pretty good. That's the best one yet.
I'll just have to tell them I'm not a thief. Just a pervert.
Pizza, pizza.
I use the bathroom.
Showtime!
Well, you were making egg foo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's fact. If you don't like the cast, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that a Lincoln bat. For the stream, then you go direct to DLNTS.org. And the IC channel is a LinuxThing.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, cause the calendar's just about to begin.
All right, welcome to the Linux Link Tech Show, episode 807 for the 1st of May. On the show tonight, we have Pat.
How's it going, man?
We have Jolly Joel.
Good evening.
We have Flying Rich.
Celebrating May Day in the Hughes Outpost, Orlando Command.
And we have Jammin' Joe.
Gonna try and fix my audio here in a minute.
His CPAP machine took off. Flying around his room. Trying to attack his 3D printer.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's an interesting visual.
Earlier this week, I officially reserved my room for the Southeast Linux Fest.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you lost your cherry.
No.
Not yet.
That a long
I have
time
my
ago,
room
dude.
Reserved for Texas Linux Fest.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, they haven't
it's
actually they haven't opened it. Yeah, there you go. They haven't actually opened it for registration yet, but they did actually run out of rooms once already, so that's a good thing.
Wait, this year?
This year, yes.
Huh. Was this Self we're talking about?
Yes, Southeast Linux Fest. Yep,
so
yep.
They have more rooms in
the Sheraton.
In the Sheraton Hotel, not somewhere else.
Yep. Yeah, and actually the Sheraton's not owned by Marriott, believe it or not. So one thing I might do when I get there is I might say, hey, can I use some of my points to help reduce how much I pay?
And they'll say, nope.
Probably. I don't know if I have enough points to get a free night yet or not. Although I'll get 3 days when I'm there, so because I'm going to drive down Thursday and then drive back Sunday. Try to get the family to go with me, but Luke's bowling a PBA experience league, and you cannot pre-bowl for that league because they roll different patterns every week. So one week they'll run the Viper oil pattern, the next one they'll do Chameleon, so on and so forth. So if he misses, he misses, and he's already going to miss one. So when we go to Detroit, actually Sterling Heights is actually where we're going, but the Detroit area. That's where we'll go in July. But looking forward to that. I'm trying to get Jeremy to come on because I think it'd be really cool. We haven't talked with him on the show in quite a few years. We talked to him last year when we were there. But anyway, I'm excited for that. They should be opening up registration. I'm going to go ahead and pay for not do the free registration. I'm going to go for the whole... you know, get the t-shirt registration because I like the t-shirts. So they always have good t-shirts at Southeast Linux Fest. So, and good beer
what
too,
are the
right,
dates?
Dan? Let's see, that would be the June 14th and 15th, I think.
I'm guessing that's a Saturday and Sunday?
A Friday and a Saturday right there. They have stuff on Sunday too, but I'm just going home Sunday the 16th. So... because it's a six-hour drive. I looked on West Virginia on their turnpike page and on their construction page. And the nice thing with them is they actually had cameras along the pike. And I can look on the cameras and see what traffic was and see what the construction zones actually look like. And actually it looks like they're almost done. So I'm hoping that... this year I won't have another 8-9 hour drive on the way back because of construction. Because that's what happened last year on the way back. Just took me forever to get home, but it's a nice drive. It's not too bad. Beautiful drive too.
Hey, so I want to talk driving and nastygrams. Just you reminded me of a topic that just hit. So I go up and down the Florida Turnpike. I have a SunPass. It's a transponder sticker that's permanently adhered to my windshield. But I do have a New York Easy Pass, not a Florida SunPass, which is permanently adhered to my windshield. And the New York Easy Pass is home in my house, and I haven't used it in 10 months. But somehow, driving here in Florida, when I go through a place that's not an RFID reader that would read my SunPass that's permanently affixed to my windshield, it read my license plate, and it went to my New York Easy Pass account. Well, they're sending it to an email I don't read because my credit card got renewed and they need, you know, the new card. So it was $1,750 I owed them, and now they tacked on a bunch of fees. Now it's like almost $50. And they won't tell me anything because the account's been locked up. And if I talk to them, I have to pay everything, send the transponder back, and then they'll talk to me. And I'm like, how about F you guys? Prove that I owe you the money. They're like, I don't know if we can do that. I'm like, so I'm guilty until proven innocent. Meanwhile, so it was easy to get somebody from New York Easy Pass on the phone, but they were completely unhelpful. It was very difficult to get somebody from Florida SunPass on the phone, but they were very helpful. So I registered an issue with them. Hopefully they'll be able to resolve it that my SunPass takes priority when I'm on my, as a Florida resident in a Florida car on a Florida turnpike, that I get charged by Florida. Because this is complete bullcrap.
Well, I have a question though. Your Sunbelt Pass, does that only work in Florida, or is that like Easy Pass that'll go anywhere?
Easy Pass only started doing Florida recently. Okay. Easy Pass went into the Midwest, and I used it about 10 months ago, in Ohio, and I think I got double charged because I paid cash out of toll, and I wasn't, because it didn't say paid with Easy Pass Go, so I want to make sure, you know, right. I paid. Anyhow, but the guy from New York, I might as well have been talking to a recording because he said the same thing over and over again. He's like, well, you could have elected to, you know, get written physical statements, but you chose not to. And I'm like, oh, hold on, let me jump in my time machine and go back and fix that. You know, I'm like, you only send me a letter when I have, you know, when I'm bursting the bank on your fees, penalties and fees. It's like, if you knew I wasn't responding to any of the emails you were sending my account that I don't read anymore because I don't use your, you know, toll device anymore because I'm in Florida using a SunPass. And why would Easy Pass, New York Easy Pass, take priority over SunPass? I'm guessing it's a glitch in the photo plate reader, and it probably just popped up with, you know, New York first or something. I have no idea. But hopefully I can get it all worked out, and New York can go F themselves. So that's my adventures in technology and driving.
RFID chips, huh?
I you know, there's nothing G-rated I can say about New York because I just can't say anything. I would have to say it in a bar with nobody around and no phones around to really tell you what I'm thinking.
But I'll tell you what, there's nothing more than a pain in the ass when that Easy Pass crap doesn't work.
And comes for you.
Well, I've had a situation where I've, like the Bay Bridge Tunnel, if you go over it, it's a $17 toll.
Ooh, yeah, you might as well rent an airplane.
Yeah, huh? But they, every toll booth. There's no easy, there's an easy pass lane, but you still, like, there's still a person at the booth there, so there's, so you have to stop. Or it used to be that way that you always had to stop. And I've gotten to that point and my easy pass wouldn't work right there for some reason. Mm-hmm. And they used to have to, like, you're like, oh, we'll take a credit card or cash or whatever.
Now you need an amplifier for your easy pass.
Yeah. But now then they just switched to taking the easy pass number and recording or something.
Dan, the bridge tunnel setup, did they ever have tunnel bunnies like they did New York?
What's a tunnel bunny? Oh, no, not there. No. Are you kidding me? The Bay Bridge tunnel or the tunnel right? The Bay Bridge tunnel, that'd be a terrible place for, first, how would they get out there? That's in the middle of the bay, number one.
It is.
You know, it's, I think the first tunnel that you would come to is at least 5 miles out from the beach, from the shoreline. That'd be terrible. Terrible place to stay.
You do know what tunnel bunnies are.
I'm guessing they're the prostitutes that hang out in the tunnel.
The booth
babes. Yeah. That's in New York. Cause when you say a tunnel to me, I'm always thinking about the tunnels around here and there's no way anybody's going to be hanging out in those tunnels. But.
No, those aren't nice tunnels.
I'll tell you what confuses the heck out of me as far as, and they're going to be doing it on I-4 here, is like congestion pricing on express lanes. It's like, how do you know how much you're going to pay?
Oh, they have that here. Now in DC, if you're ever going around DC, the Beltway, and I know they do this there too, that they will right there at the entrance or right before the entrance along the way before you get to it, it will tell you how much the pricing is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So like it will be nothing, maybe a dollar at like 11 o'clock in the morning when there's no traffic or like really late at night when there's no traffic. But at rush hour traffic, it's like, $36.
No way.
Yes.
No
it's like
way.
Is that?
It goes up that much. It goes like I've seen it go up to like $36, $40.
And you ever see a jalopy riding in that paying the $36?
No, I. You know what?
Or you just see Lamborghinis
I'm
going by.
I'm too busy stuck in with the other schleps in the non-pass lane in the traffic that's backing it up for 30 miles out of DC.
Oh, those are the fast lanes, right? The cost that they have fast lanes, and those are the ones you have to pay for.
There's the commuter fast lanes. Yeah, they express lanes. They're called.
Okay, so those you have to pay for those. Okay, I get it. All right.
Yeah, there's one here that they don't charge for yet. It's a reversible roadway, and it's like if I ever go to work, it's the opposite direction when I'm going and coming back. So I very rarely use it.
Yeah, I remember those down there. Yeah. Now, thing I always remember, well, each turnpike's a little bit different. Like if you drive on Pennsylvania's turnpike, you pick up a ticket and then you pay at the end. No matter how far you drive. So you can be driving 6-7 hours across Pennsylvania from Harrisburg all the way to New Stanton, and then you pay your $8 at the end. Now, when I drive down to Charlotte, I'll be driving through West Virginia on the West Virginia Turnpike. And that's one of those deals where, you know, every X amount of miles, there's a booth. You have to throw $4 at them or something like that. I think it's $4 usually. So,
oh, well, what is it, New Jersey? The, Garden State Parkway?
Yeah.
That's a total fuster cluck. It's like 25 cents every 5 miles. It's like, really?
That's fucking stupid.
Really?
But at least it's a good 20, 30 minutes between them, at least. You know, that's the least amount of time it takes to get from one toll thing to another. Cause the other thing that sucks about those, especially if you don't have an easy pass, is you pretty much have to stop. and slow down so you lose time going through there. Not a lot, you know, but you still lose time because now you gotta go back and accelerate again. But, you know, so it's just
so
interesting
I like
how they,
not stopping
work
with the easy pass, but yes. I don't like how easy it makes for the man to tax our ass. That's what I mean.
That's for sure.
It also keeps a record of how fast you're going.
Oh, dude, they're not keeping a record how fast I'm going.
Well, no, they know how fast. If you used to hit this exit and then, you know, you're at this exit at this time, they know how fast you'd be going in between there.
If they got me up on the leaderboard in the Florida Sun Bears. They're like, new high speed goes to Flying Rich.
In that pickup truck of yours?
Pickup truck? What are you talking about?
I thought you had a pickup truck.
No, I'm driving the Genesis.
I thought you had a beater like pickup truck that you were going to get, you give your daughter to use.
Well, she's driving the Envoy.
Okay.
Beater, you know, that's still pretty nice.
For I thought you described it as like a beater truck.
No. You must be talking to Joel. It's not on blocks or anything.
I don't have any cars on blocks, thank you very much.
Your cousin does now.
Nope.
Oh, yeah, he fixed it.
Is it still running?
For that green one? I think it's still running, yeah.
They're still using it? Good for them.
Yeah, they put air in the tires and gas in it, and it runs. It's amazing.
No, there was a lot wrong with it. They replaced the battery once
but wait,
on it.
Joel, did they flush the antifreeze? Did they do that?
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, dude. They didn't flush no antifreeze out of my other car either, so that's not what they flushed.
Oh, what'd they flush?
The engine itself, dude.
Well, that's another worthless thing.
Well, you know what? That's fine. You know, you think it's worthless.
No, it's not that I think.
No, listen,
the English language is
care.
Very specific.
I don't fucking care, Rich. I'm sick of it. All right? Keep your damn judgments to yourself. I don't care. Sorry, Dan. Continue.
Oh, well, okay. I think after my last complaint about Ubuntu, 1904.
Are you saying they fixed Ubuntu just for you?
I don't know. I haven't had any problems with it since I complained about it. So I hope that they have. It's been running pretty well for me.
Cool. What I see, is Slackware has edition 30 out?
Why, you Fedora. Not? I don't even know.
Or 30,
no,
okay.
Slackware is still on the 14 series. 14.2 was released on 2016, July 1st.
Okay, I saw a tech story that made me scream. Amiga is coming out with a PowerPC. It's A-EON, however you say that. Talks about the future of the Amiga platform. I think they're about 15 years late.
Yeah.
Wait, what is it? A-EON?
A-EON. Aeon?
Oh.
So they're talking about doing a PowerPC Amiga.
Is there really any support for? I mean, PowerPC.
Audio says they've been talking about that for years. Amiga technology at the time was crazy advanced compared to everybody else out there. And I'm just kind of shocked that this just kind of got kicked in the corner. Couple of things that I postulate is if the Commodore 64, when you think about the original PC that was out there versus the Commodore 64, if the Commodore 64 had a card cage, or like a, you know, dock on the side that you could drop expansion cards into it, we'd all be using Commodores right now. Tell me if I'm wrong. Because the Commodore had color graphics, it had audio, everything was built into it, whereas the PC had like 8 mega RAM, and this was like 64. The Commodore was a really good machine for the dollar and the value and what you got out of it compared to the PC of the time.
Or the Mac even. I remember going from an Amiga to the original Mac and being disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah.
Is that Ars Technica poster you're looking at? From, actually there was one from 2 years ago. May of 2017. They actually have pictures of the inside of it.
So who do you sell this to? I mean, is this like saying, hey, I got the Moses 2.0 tablet maker. It's like, yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's they missed the boat. It would have been cool
years
ago.
Missed the boat. I mean, along with the Mastodons. Yes, they missed the boat.
Well, here's my thing. Like, I've got, 12-inch PowerBook, and I bought one, you know, for ultra cheap on eBay just because I kind of missed my old one that died and I never could fix it. So I bought one of those, and then I put the highest version of Linux I can put on is, I believe, 1604. I can't put anything higher than that because all PowerPC support has been dropped for the Linux kernel. And there's not one distribution that has it anymore, I do believe, except for maybe Slackware. But I haven't really looked at that in a while. But one of the bigger problems, though, at least with the chip that's in that, with the this is a G4 with the Altivec and all that stuff, is that it's just way too slow. Even if I could put a modern browser on it, it just would be completely useless for Gmail and other things like that. About the only reason to have it anymore, I need to get a OS X version that'll run on it and put that on it, and so I can run the old Mac software that, which I don't have. So, so I really haven't done much with it right now. It's just in my museum. I mean, there's just no power. I mean, unless you're looking at server based things. There's really no support for it anymore. And the reason I say server-based is because IBM's still running the Power hardware, and you can run Linux on that just fine. Anything all the way up to, I think Red Hat's RHEL still supports it in some cases. But it might be old still there too, so it just depends. But PowerPC as an architecture is for the most part dead. So why would they have done this? You know, it doesn't make sense now. It might have made sense 10 years ago, but not now.
I'm wondering about the healthiness of this project to begin with. I mean, the article on Ars Technica is almost a year old now, isn't it? Yeah, it was like May 24th, 2007, 2 years old. And if you go to Aeon's website, it keeps telling you the X5000, they're placing orders now for the complete X5000 system. So I can't get any more information, off of this website really about anything. So, and in addition to that, I was curious, like you were about the software, and I guess it's, according to this article, it's still version 4.1 of
Amiga DOS 4.1
Workbench.
Amiga, yeah, and that's, I'm glad they got it running and everything, but what are you going to do? I can't imagine this type of product is going to come cheap.
No, and you know, again, ROI on that. I mean, I still, in New York, I still have a couple of Amigas. I think I got a 3000, a couple of 500s and stuff like that. You know, people gave them to me as they were like cleaning out their garages or whatever, because they knew I was an Amiga guy. And I have a 1040 ST. I don't know if I'll ever power these things up again. I don't know why I would.
But yeah, even if you did, what would you do with it?
Right, right. I'm kind of beyond that. I hate to say.
But and even if like you were able to get one of these modern systems with the Amiga OS on it, again, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
Unless you're going to program it, write your own software. I mean, is the software that's available for it, is it going to run modern websites?
I forgot what the browsers were on the Amiga. I don't even remember now.
Did they have browsers?
Yeah, there were browsers, and there was like AMI TCP, and if you didn't buy it, it only ran for so many minutes, so you could use like a TCP connection. I forgot how I jacked that up. I think I shared my internet through a serial port to the Amiga and ran, you know, TCP over serial.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just pasted, there was a link from Ars Technica. Ars Technica did get a chance to review one back in 2017. There's a dual-core free-scale CPU up to 2.5 gigahertz, up to 64 gigs of RAM, 250-gig SSD drive. The price that they of the machine that they reviewed was $1,840. And that also included an ATI Radeon R9 270X video card, a DVD-ROM drive, and it says full-screen Neuromancer, whatever that is. I've never heard of that before. But,
I forgot what that is also.
Yeah, but what's going to run on Amiga OS? Yeah, that's the thing, you know.
But, you know, and again, is the OS capable of taking advantage of that much?
That too, yeah.
Right? I mean, it almost seems like, even if it is, I mean, what are you going to run on this damn thing? Legacy stuff. Like, they're talking about the images are like less than 1.78 megabytes of all, you know, complete software and stuff. And it wasn't originally designed to run on these types of systems.
You can run every piece of software from the Fred Fish disks.
Yeah, at the same time. You could run every piece of Amiga software probably at the same time with this kind of system. But again, I'm like, aside from nostalgia, is there anything you could really do with it that you can't do that would make it better? Or aside from the sheer entertainment and joy of something new.
Right.
Yeah, that's kind of like wishing back carbureted cars. I'm like, heck no, I don't want to drive a carburetor.
Yeah. Well, it's like, now, whatever happened to, like, now I get some of it, but, you know, that it's like, when Atari announced their game system, you know, their new game system, which essentially is, it's more or less, it's not a Raspberry Pi, but it is. It's about the same thing, you know. It's an ARM chip, and, you know, and it's not running, you know.
Is it a retro platform?
Yeah, I think so. That's what they're marketing it for, mostly. Although there are supposed to be new games on it, but I haven't heard anything on it in, gosh, probably about a year now, at least. It just goes back towards things where, like, we were talking about, a friend of mine posted about, almost nobody in the show probably even bought any of their stuff, but Anki, the company, the robotics company that came out with the little, robotic cars that you can control with an iPhone, and then the Cosmo robot, some other robot, and then they started doing some AI stuff.
We have a Cosmo.
Oh, you have a Cosmo, one of those Cosmo robots?
Yeah, my daughter got one for Christmas.
Well, that company's shutting down, so who knows how long it'll work. But
I guess as long as the application that they have works.
But yeah, and, well, my thing was is are they going to open source it? The answer is probably not.
Why would they care about you?
Yeah, well, they're not, because they're out of business. You know, they can't support their servers anymore. You know, so it's like.
Is the Cosmo network connected?
I do believe it is.
Does it phone home or something, Dan?
Yeah, they have servers.
There's so. I never played around with it. Like when she got it, she played around with it with her sisters, and I never really got a chance to play around with it myself. And she hasn't touched it much recently, but I'll have to check it out. I know it works off an application,
right?
But they never connected.
So if it's app based, then it's probably got some sort of Wi-Fi in. Or
well, I'm sure it does. I think it has. Might have both. I'll have to look into it.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's the thing, though, with that stuff. And you know what? That's a closed source company, and you know what's going to happen there. But I've ran into that even with some close or open source companies, too. You know, supposedly open source companies. Now, you guys, I probably barely remember talking about it, but do you remember Tuxdroid?
Wait.
See? Nobody remembers it.
Wait, what was Tuxdroid?
It was essentially it was one of those ambient technology kind of things where you could have it tell you the weather and stuff like that. It had a little remote control with it, and it had a website.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. And basically, they shut down. They never released all the source, so basically, it was dead to me. Once they were done, there was no further updates to it. They didn't release source code so that anybody can look at it and work on it. And, it's just, you know, it's useless. And the open source companies are just as guilty of doing this as closed source companies.
Wait a second. How could we say that they're an open source company if they never released the source code?
Well, it's one of those things where they were supposed to release the source code, but they never did. Oh, well, hold on a second. There is a GitHub page, so there's some sort of code. But it's one of those things where there just wasn't enough, sufficient enough install base for people to even bother working on it.
There's that, too.
That's the primary problem with it, but I ended up chucking it because it was just, why do I want to dick with it anymore? You know, it was one of those products, probably a product ahead of its time. Some of that is, you can kind of see some of that with, the Neuros products, Neuros OSD. They promised an OSD 2 that never happened. Then they just brought out a PC. With the Neuron Slank, you know, and I love Joe. He's had great ideas too, but you know, one of the things they wanted to do with the Neuron Slank was basically get it to see Netflix, and Linux never really was able to see Netflix until much later after they were pretty much done with it. And I don't ever know what happened to the OSD, OSD 2, I should say, which is supposed to be basically a high definition version of the OSD. And nowadays, who really cares? I mean. Well, Pat, you still have a Myth TV box, is there really a lot of people that are recording TV shows anymore? I don't. I have a DVR box that I barely use, you know. So it's one of those things where I just need to get the box, take it on over to get rid of it, you know, because I just don't record things anymore. I just stream it. So I mean, but you know, it's a disappointing thing when open source companies kind of do that, or if they bring out a open source product, or a product that is targeted at open source users, that happens too, quite a bit. You know, and right now it's to the point where. If somebody brings out an open source product, I'm going to wait until it gets sufficient of a mass before I even take a look at it anymore. You know, like it's like if somebody brought out a purpose built Mycroft box, would I even deal with it? Would I even mess with it until half the world had it? You know, no, not anymore.
How much
supporting those things, but you know,
So, Rich, you might have a better answer for this.
Yes.
How much, you know, you bring up an interesting point, Joel, when you say that, you know, going forward, you'd be more apt to wait until something reaches a critical mass before you acquire or look into it due to some of those issues. But how much of a problem is that in the single board computer environment that some of these boards come out and there's just not a large enough or an enthusiastic enough community behind it to make it
good questions. Viable. All right. So, first off, anything you buy Raspberry Pi, I would say you're not throwing your money away unless you're buying the Raspberry Pi modules in their cluster board. Then you're throwing your money away. Odroid is a solid performer. So if Odroid, you know, pops out a new board, I'm buying it. I got an N2 right here. It's a little early in the OS development for it, but it's a hexa-core and it's got four USB 3 ports on it and HDMI gigabit Ethernet. So it's definitely a solid machine as far as that goes. The GPU on it doesn't have drivers for it with, right now I'm running a beta version of, DietPi on it. But there are a couple of OSs for it. There is an Ubuntu, out there for it, which I haven't tried out yet. So the complex answer is, any consumer Raspberry Pi, just buy anything that's Odroid, I would really say just buy. Something like an Orange Pi, count on throwing your money away. Whatever investment you have in that, count on that having no value 8-10 months in the future. Or not having any value to you. The original, like, Orange Pi Zero was a better deal than the Raspberry Pi Zero because at the time the Raspberry, Raspberry Pi Zero didn't have Bluetooth or Wi-Fi on it. Now it does. So now the Raspberry Pi Zero is a better deal. When you had to buy all sorts of adapters and dongles to make a Raspberry Pi Zero work, then you're paying almost $20 to get a functional Raspberry Pi. The Pi Zero was good if you needed unconnected intelligence on a device. If you had to start connecting things so it had Wi-Fi or whatever, all of a sudden you're blowing a stink load of money and you could have bought a Raspberry Pi for what it would cost to make a original Pi Zero connected.
Did that improve my audio?
Yeah, yes. I don't hear the whisk noise or whatever. The Pines, now, all right, so Dore talks about this concept. Pine, I would buy whatever they make for another reason, because they're really pushing the boundaries. So far, they've delivered good stuff. I like what they've delivered, and I'm very happy with it. And I would almost, as a support type thing, just buy what they're doing because they're doing good things. The ROC 64 is a solid machine, and as if you're doing single board computing and you're confident in what you're doing, I would advise buying your base machine being like a 2 gig or 1 gig ROC 64, not the ROC Pro. The 1 gig ROC Pro, I'm sorry, the 1 gig ROC 64 is $10 cheaper than the Raspberry Pi. I think it's like $25. The 2 gig is $35 and the 4 gig, and I always go big, the 4 gig is $45. So I've got two of those right now. I've got the, ROC Pro 64 in, let's see, I believe the ROC 64 also has eMMC. So you're talking about, if you compare a $35 ROC 64 to a $35 Raspberry Pi 3B+. The ROC 64 has USB 3 on it. It has gigabit Ethernet and it has, eMMC. So along with pretty much everything else that a Raspberry Pi has. So if you wanted to run Docker on it, if you wanted to do any kind of high-speed data communication, even running, I know some people like Tracy Holtz has a Pi 3 in his truck, in the cab of his truck, and he's running Plex on it. And I think you got to run, you got to be careful with the resolution of what you're running Plex on a Raspberry Pi with. Likewise, the ROC 64 doesn't get you too far out of that ballpark, but it's a little bit more capable. So, to sum it up, I would say anything Raspberry Pi consumer grade, any Odroid, any Pine, I'd have no question about spending my money on. Now, if it's something that's $20 or less, I don't mind blowing some money on something and taking a chance. I missed out on the Atomic Pi, which was an Atom. It was a $35 single board computer with an Atom processor on it. It had a single gigabit Ethernet. Apparently, they're going to be more for sale, and this sold out pretty quick on Amazon. But what I'd like to do is drop a – it's got USB 3 and a gig Ethernet HDMI. And what I'd want to do is run pfSense on it. Just get a USB 3 to gig Ethernet adapter, and you got two gig Ethernet ports on it, and you have you know, an Intel-based device that you could run pfSense on. Their Intel source code is open, or I don't know if it's open source or free, but they do have an ARM-based pfSense, but they want to sell you the hardware and everything. So for under $50, you could have a box running pfSense, which is pretty darn cool.
Yep. Well, and that's why I like the Pinebook, which by the way, Dan, I'm gonna try and get my ass to the post office probably Friday, because I do have a lunch Friday. I'm gonna go do anyway. But that one is pretty solid, and it does at least, I will give it one thing, at least there is a very recent version that will run on it within, I would say, within 2 years. So by the time they got anything newer on it, the Pinebook Pro will be out, and hopefully they'll have newer software on it. And that's another part of the thing too. It's like, if I buy something like that, you know, that's why, for my SBCs, I'm almost all Raspberry Pi. I don't have any of the other ones yet. I do plan on it. Like, I want to get that one we talked about last week. Was it the Odroid N2, I think it was? But, because that's reasonably priced, you know. But it's like, if somebody brought out some, you know, like, I just remember, back in the early 2000s to the mid 2000s, where people were bringing things out like things like I'm trying to remember the phone. What was the phone? It was made by a company by the name of FIC. OpenMoco. Remember that? Where's that project? You know, so I really wanted to buy one. Of course, back at that time, now I could probably have swing that kind of of cash, but because of what happened before, I'm very leery to do that on that. And that thing was a nice phone. It was promised Linux, you know, a full Linux handset, never really came to be. I spent money on the Nokia N810. That too is also a, for the most part, dead platform. There's nobody doing any development on it anymore that I know of. And they've all moved on to things like Raspberry Pis and stuff like that because those are much better supported. Now, granted, some of that is old technology. It's what, a 400 megahertz processor? Do we really want to be running that today? I don't know. but when people come at open source and Linux and say that open source and Linux will let you get more life out of your hardware, it's simply not true today. I don't care what anybody says. It just, you might have been true at some point, and it still is true with x86, because you can have a 4 or 5 year old laptop right now running a relatively recent version of Linux, and it's going to do just fine. You know, that's one of the few things that will. But when it comes to other technology that are closer to what some of the other consumer technology is, or closer to like an Android phone or something like that, not really. you know.
Well, I'm an Android. If you could, it's a tough comparison with an Android phone because most of that is closed technology.
Well, true. I mean, you've got the radios and stuff that for the most part remain closed. But I do remember how long I kept the G1 going, at that point, the G1 absolutely needed all the hacking Pat and I were doing on it to make it work great. And it was semi-fun back then.
Wait. So is your are you saying it can be a good thing to extend the life of hardware or it's not? Because I thought you were saying it's
well,
not.
I'm going to say it depends.
Well, yeah, okay.
It depends what it is. You know, so, I mean, you know, if it's an x86 PC, absolutely. That's no question. You can use a 10-year-old PC today and it would still be doing just fine. You can use, you know, now granted, I've got a 10-year-old PC, that G4, and it is really. So again, like I said, it's one of those things that depends. If it's based on a popular platform like x86, then yes. You know, but if it's something that like a PC chip, not so much. You know, or any of the ARM chips, you know, or the beloved Jive that we talk about so often on here, you know, those are things that I really liked and had a lot of interest in, and I spent $300 on it, and besides not being able to buy to actually fix the dang thing, you know, and get parts for it, you know. Which that's not going to happen today, you know. You can't get a modern version of Android running on it, mostly because of the Tegra chip that was in it. It was a closed source, it had a binary blob in it, you know. It's one of those things where I want that stuff to work and I want that stuff to happen, but. Is it actually going to make those kinds of things useful for more than 2 years? Probably not.
How'd the rich go?
He's probably mini PCing.
Right. He said to hell with us.
I still don't understand. I mean, I kind of understand the point you're making, but. So you're saying, let me get this right. If I could sum it up, what you said is, if a technology, for a technology to have longevity, it needs some kind of following or a base. And that will increase the longevity. And even if it's open source, that, and it still has a base, it will increase the longevity. But the moment that said object, regardless of whether it's open or closed source, ceases to have any kind of base, regardless of whether it's open or closed,
it's done.
Probably isn't going to make much of a difference.
Right.
Is what you're saying. That it's just going to be as useless as if it was closed source. But more so if it's closed source, because then there's probably no way
Graybeard brings up points. Says the point is that you can't depend on proprietary hardware. None of the hardware platforms mentioned so far is open source. Very correct, but neither is x86 either. x86 technology. If you got a UEFI or even if it's just an old BIOS based machine, technically that BIOS and the UEFI is not open source. You know, but it runs on, but Linux continues to be supported and run on it. Now, we're lucky in that we have lots of developers that want to work on the kernel and make that continue to happen. But that doesn't happen on the ARM-based platforms. That doesn't happen on some obscure chip, like maybe a MIPS chip or something like that, you know, or Spark or PowerPC. Now, granted, some of those are quite old nowadays, but once people have moved on from Spark and moved on from MIPS, and by the way, yeah, I know there was a closed source, But really, so is any phone that we have nowadays. Even if it runs Android, it's a got closed source bits in it. There's nobody's trying to make a platform that somebody other than us, like if they bring out a platform, like Android is probably one of the last more or less open platforms that came to be. But if somebody wants to knock iOS or Android off and they want to maintain open, first off, the only people who gives a crap about that are geeks like us. Our parents won't care, our grandparents won't care, and most of the world won't care. And that means it's going to have a niche following and it's not going to grow out of that niche. It will never grow out of that niche.
I mean, you could have said that about Linux too, but that's not what happened.
Well, true.
Or GNU.
True.
Well, I kind of hear what you're saying. And what I wanted to get and get Rich's input on this, because he deals with more than I do, is one of the things that I notice, particularly with these single board computers, and I guess the majority of them are ARM-based devices, and there's a lot of still closeness surrounding them, that I feel more so than when the latest motherboard comes out from Gigabit or whoever, manufacturing motherboards, the majority of them come out and they're going to be fully supported by Windows, maybe somewhat supported by OS X. More than likely not. Or I don't know, probably without some special hacking, but Linux, it'll eventually come around, especially if they've released the specs for the chipsets and different things in there. But with these single board computers, I don't see that driving, like with the motherboards, the larger motherboards, Intel based, and they come out. There's a huge drive by Windows. Windows drives a lot of that, Linux some of it. But at the single board computer level, I don't know what's driving that. Because, yeah. And the reason why I ask is, you don't see a lot of Windows on the single board computer. So the next obvious choice seems to be Linux. What's driving, Linux? And then for...
The only platform that has Windows on it is actually the Raspberry Pi.
Right, but what I'm saying is, aside from the Raspberry Pi and the Odroid, and there's a bunch of other single board computers out there, and even I found this to be a problem with the Odroid when it first came out, is that there's not a lot of choice available to you out there, for which, to get an OS on there, and even when you want to get something on there, it's just this crazy methods and hoops that you had to jump through. Now, my question is, who are these devices for? Cause I mean, granted, yeah. I'm sure, tinkers and hobbyists is one, but that can't be it. Cause that's too small of a market for these devices. Yet at the same time, and I'm not trying to limit them cause they're fantastic. They're awesome. They have so much potential you could do with them, but I don't see that out there. I don't see big companies or a lot of products coming out that are like, oh, well, this is just a Raspberry Pi slapped inside of here. I don't see that. Now, I know there's a lot of single board computers and different things like that, but where's it going with Raspberry Pi?
Yep.
Just beyond hobbies. I mean, like I said, it seems like there's so much you could do from it. Is that just like introductory things? And when you actually get a company, you're sure as hell ain't going to use a Raspberry Pi. You're just going to get some kind of single board computer custom fabricated for what exactly you want to do. And then you, is that how
or like, works? Or like 3D printers,3D printers, you have boards like Duet board, and other, most of them are based on Arduino, especially if it's running Marlin firmware, that's Arduino code. But now, granted, there are starting to up, you know, the amount of hardware in the 3D printer isn't really all that much. You know, when you think about it, it's probably an 8-bit processor equivalent. It's not that powerful. All right. But now they're starting to bring out 32-bit boards, and they're starting to have the 3D printers do more things than just, you know, like, for example, they'll have a website built into the thing. So, like Octoprint or something like that. That's running on the board that's running right on the printer itself, where they'll have their own software that runs on top of that. You know, whatever. It doesn't really matter. Okay.
Is that like some custom made circuit board? Some custom made board?
No.
Is it a Raspberry Pi? Is it an Arduino?
Be.
What?
They can be. Now, so some of them have, like, there is a company out there that actually has a combination of Arduino and Raspberry Pi based technology on one board. So they have everything on one board, and so that lets that printer do those more advanced things. So, and that's an actual board that's being sold. What is driving, like, for example, why is the Raspberry Pi the most popular one? Well, one of the reasons is it's the first one.
Well, yeah, I get it. It's like, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you have Raspberry right. Pi, and then you have what? What's next? Odroid?
You have BeagleBone, you have Odroid.
Well, BeagleBone and Arduino, aren't they, they're
BeagleBone is more like a Raspberry Pi than an Arduino.
A BeagleBone is?
Correct.
Because I'm not that, again, like I said, I'm not overly, but where, again, are these just introductory devices that you open you up to the gateway to the world of single board, specific computing, where you're not going to use a Raspberry Pi for your device, you're going to have a custom made.
In some cases,
board?
The one I'm thinking back to the presentation I saw last year itself, where they were talking about building like a headband or something for those for I forget whether it was for disabled people. Actually, I think it was for deaf people. If I remember, I forget. It's one of those things where that's one of those presentations I would definitely go back and listen to again. But so in those cases, they were developing their own boards. So, you know, and that's what a lot of people are using things like the Raspberry Pi itself is so very popular in the ham radio community, especially if you're looking at things like, D-Star or DMR, you got the DVMM, ZumSpots that, basically you slap a board on top of a Pi and you have a cookbook, essentially. It's just a download, like a PyStar is the name of a software package. You just put it on the SD card and it does what it wants to. And it's one of those things. That's why the Raspberry Pi is so successful, is there are smarter people than I am, because the guys who do the D-Star stuff is, you know, they're just incredible. They put this stuff up there and then it allows Joe, basic person with hardly any Linux knowledge, to just throw this together and be able to do something pretty great with it without having to actually really know how to program it, you know, really program it, you know. That's one reason why the Pis are just so successful, you know, is because there's enough of a following that it's making it easy for people to do.
Successful in what way, though? Because what I'm saying is,
are they successful outside of our crowd?
Well, that's what I mean. What is the measure of success? Like, you can do a lot of stuff, you know, with a laptop or a computer with a with ham radio.
Well, there's a lot. Yeah, true.
Those devices right there, they have a far greater audience than the Linux enthusiasts or the ham radio operators or whatever. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there's this big, huge, wide market out there for a laptop or a computer, right? But
right.
And the Raspberry Pi, looks like there should be a huge market, but where is it, like, where is it going? I don't.
Right.
I mean, again, I don't, I have yet to see a device in the store that's not sold as a Raspberry Pi that is a Raspberry Pi device doing something specific.
Can it, actually, you can go to, I haven't been to Target in a while, but for a while you can go to Target and buy the Kano computer, which is basically a Pi and a keyboard and everything in a box.
I think you still can.
Yeah, well, right,
but what I'm saying is, you should be like those little 1001 video game systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't, you look at that and say, well, you can probably power that from a Raspberry Pi or some device like that, but it's, that's not what's in there.
Right? Correct.
And what's in there, like, it seems to be specifically made for that device. Like, you wouldn't necessarily go out and buy when that and come home and do something with it like you would a Raspberry Pi. So
when you're doing it in bulk, it's cheaper to, you know,
yes,
do your own boards.
Those boards, right? Correct.
You're probably right. I mean, but that's why I'm like, look at this and say, aside from hobbyists, where, like, what is the market for a Raspberry Pi or these single board devices?
Well, like Joel was saying, with the community that's out there, the library of everybody's projects that they've done, and simple step-by-step instructions, it's something that, you know, your average parent can get for their kid and be a hobbyist for a day.
Oh, I don't doubt that. But
that's the niche market.
Right, but it seems like these devices, like, why come out with so many different devices like this if there's not a wider market that's more than just, like, a niche market? Like, a hot from the hobbyists. Like, what is the motivation for the next whatever Pi that's not a Raspberry Pi? Like, what? I just think it doesn't sound right going, like, all this effort going after a niche market.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth either.
Right, right.
These are fantastic devices, but I look at this and say, what are these companies? These companies can't just be looking at the hobbyist niche market and saying, man, we're really gonna. Cause it just doesn't make sense because no other. You don't see that with cell phones. You don't see that with you know, laptops or, you know, larger systems. Why these single board computer systems? And it's just, and this is my ignorance. This is where my ignorance comes in about this.
But you get people making the cell phones and the laptops from the single board systems.
That would be awesome, but.
But how many companies, you know, start with like a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino? And from there, build out a cell phone or whatever. Don't they use other?
No. The tinkerers do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think the whole idea, now the Pi has kind of ballooned out of the idea that originally it was for. It was originally made to be a computer, a cheap computer that, kids in STEM, could take and use. However, folks like us said, oh, ha, look at all the cool stuff this thing can do, and we've basically blown it up to be something much bigger than it ever was designed to be. Now, what's next for the Raspberry Pi Foundation? Are they going to make this a product that, here's kind of what I would like to see. I would like to see them do something to build up the infrastructure around the Pi such that it becomes like buying a board, you know, like what we used to build PCs, you know, where some people still do build PCs. I don't. I haven't had it for a while. I'm kind of getting the itch to. But go out and buy an SBC, put it in a case, you know, buy a eMMC, an SSD card, whatever, and all that, and make it easy to put, and by easy, I don't mean just burn a card with Etcher or something. I mean, make it such that it's more similar to the way x86 is today than what the ARM stuff is now. Make it a little bit more universal so that, hey, Ubuntu, can they just bring out an ISO or a thumb drive image? You slap that on there, you run that, and installs it on the internal drive or on an SD card, and you're off to the races. You know, and make it more universal. It's, and by the way, this is just Joel's idea. I don't know anything they're doing, and I don't even think they'll do this. But make ARM more successful by just making it more universal and making it such that no matter who makes a board, whether it's Raspberry Pi, the Odroid folks, whoever, make the same OS image work on any of them. You know, and that's just never going to happen.
I guess that comes kind of around to my point. You know, when I look at these things and say, who the fuck are they for? Because if you're not using a Pi, the documentation and how to use these devices is pure shit. I mean, it's terrible. It is awful. And I'm like, who is using these devices? Like, who has the information? And if they have that information, why is it so difficult to come by? Why is it so difficult to do anything on these devices? And if the barrier to entry is like, here's a device, you probably, unless you could read three different languages, you'll never figure out how to do anything other than what it comes shipped with and how to install things, you know? So like that's even a niche audience. So like, I still don't, there's gotta be something I'm missing. And again, these are great devices, but yet it just seems
right now
that out of everything we've ever had to deal with, these devices are for this ultra niche market, and nothing else ever seems to cater to an ultra niche market like that.
Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then there's like the people like there's so many people now, like when I listen to, and one of the reasons I still listen to This Week in Tech, even though they drive me batshit crazy most of the time, but mostly because I want to get the quote unquote noob tech, because that's what it really is, because none of the people that are on there are really, really technical as far as I'm concerned anymore. Alright. There's very few of the people that are on Twitter that way anymore, as far as I'm concerned. Alright. So basically get that kind of a view. So and I hear so many people that just extol the virtues of a Chromebook. And I'm like, for me, you know, I've looked into buying one several times, and I just decided it's just not one of those platforms that are for me. Yes, I can hack it and put Linux on it. That's not the point, okay? But the point is, why do I want to spend as much as a laptop on a Chromebook where I have to hack it to make it to run Linux on it, or just buy a laptop and just run Linux on it? You see what I'm saying? Yeah, the Chromebooks are excellent, and they are great computers for those who have very little low technical needs. You know, right now for the things that I need to do, it's just not worth me buying it. You know, and that's where I think some of the issues are with some of these new technologies. And then you get some people say, well, I only ever use my phone. I don't have a laptop anymore. I'm like, are you nuts? You know, so it's just, you know, what's going to happen if Intel decides we're done? You know, which that's not going to happen for a while, fortunately. There's lots of servers out there and a lot of need for the processor. So, you know, but what's going to, you know, is the modern computer, the computer our grandkids are going to use, Are they going to have something like what we grew up with, or are they going to have a tablet that runs a closed OS and can only run that closed OS and can't run anything else because people are afraid of security things and things. They don't want all the upkeep of a standard PC.
They're going to have embedded chips that are going to be tied biometrically, and you won't be able to buy anything if you don't have the chip embedded in you.
God, I hope not, Pat.
That's where it's going.
Yep. Oh, see, Joel, Graybeard mentioned about watching Security Now and Floss Weekly. Yeah, those two are two that I don't watch anymore. Yeah, I don't have time for them.
You were saying, you know, in the future, people haven't. I don't know if the tablet is the right direction. And the reason why I say that is as an input device, it sucks.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. You know, although it depends, you know, because this comes from using my Surface Pro. And this is kind of where one of the reasons why I don't put Linux on it only, or dual boot it. You know, I have enough storage to do it, all right? But when I take the keyboard off and just switch to using, like, most evenings, that's kind of what I'll do is I'll take the keyboard off and I'll have it in my lap and I'll be watching stuff on YouTube. And if I want to do want to write a post or do want to do a Google search, just take the pen and I write it on there and it does the search. You know, right now, what kind of handwriting recognition technology is there on the Linux world? I don't know of any. So you're sitting there trying to tap on an on-screen keyboard, which sucks, you know. So it's then at that point, you know, if I had Linux on it, I'd be snapping, that keyboard would pretty much stay snapped on it. So it would kind of miss the point, you know. There's no real impetus by the Linux community to make that better. Technically, if I had the chops to do it, and I don't, I could do it. All right. But,
is there a future in handwriting recognition? And the reason why I ask this is because I look at this and say, all right, what seems to make most sense would be voice dictation. That is the least, but you're going to need a way to correct things, or if something happens, you can't use your voice, you need a way to input. Why not just keyboard and like mouse? Like, why have handwriting recognition? That seems like, I see handwriting stuff as going way out of nobody, like, how many times do you write something anymore? You know?
True enough.
Go out of my way, you know, to store notes electronically than having to put them on paper because I don't want to go find paper. So I was like, voice dictation seems like the better way to go if you're going to go like when we look at the future, because handwriting just doesn't, I don't
know. Until you're trying to do that when in a noisy airport, and then you realize how sucky the voice dictation is. you know. But you know, that works great if I'm sitting here in my office, you know, like I am now. That stuff works great. You know, but when you're sitting in the airport and talking to your phone just to type stuff into it or something, or a tablet, same thing. You're going to get a lot of strange looks, for one.
You know, if more people were doing it, you probably wouldn't get strange looks. Most of the time, the voice dictation on my phone seems to work pretty well. Although I don't use it that often. I should.
Yep. Well, or like. And here's a funky thing I discovered, too. My wife has the iPhone XR. And I said, well, she still hasn't figured out why she can't send for some reason she can't send an email on it. I don't know why. All right. Anyway, one of the first things I told her was how to, you know, just turn it off and on again, you know, restart it, standard geek kind of response, you know? She couldn't figure out how to turn it off. She handed it to me. I couldn't figure out how to, I actually had to Google to figure out how to turn it off, because if you press and hold what is the power button, Siri comes up. All right. So to turn up, if you have one of these devices, all right, if you have to use one for work or whatever, the how you turn off is you hold the volume key down and then press the power button. Then it'll turn off. And I'm like, who, what, huh, why? And this is one of the iPhones that doesn't have the home button too, by the way. So they have all this gesture stuff. And that's the other thing too. You know, I always hear people, especially people with either Macs or iDevices, just say, oh, these gestures are so great. And I'm like, every time I've ever seen somebody who isn't semi-technical use these things, they don't know those gestures. They have no idea. They just managed to get go along, and I'm like, why are you adding this stuff in? They're basically trying to force people to learn the gestures because they have no choice. They have to use the gesture in order to get your home screen up. Instead of just press a button like it was before. What's simpler? So, but that's beyond the point though. But, you know, it's like in this quote unquote post, I don't ever call it a post PC world because they're still making PCs. I can still go buy one today. Okay. So, but when we get old and gray and retired, are we still going to want to have a PC similar to what we have now? I don't know. I probably will, but then, you know, that's, you know, will I actually be able to buy it? That's the question.
Wait, buy and what?
Buy a PC like we have today. Are we still going to be able to buy that in 20 years? I don't know.
Probably not.
You know, it'll be a single board computer, a single,
like it'll be the size of a nickel.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and then we'll have to buy like telescopes just so we can use our computer, right? Because our eyes are shot.
Whoa, man! Rich just left without even saying goodbye.
And then even further, especially with how many times Pat has gotten locked out of Facebook. When are they going to start building censorship technology into your devices? You know, like beyond what's in the software.
Well, I'm not sure that will happen. That doesn't make any sense.
That's like I watched several YouTube live streamers, and one of them, you can actually, unless you capitalize their name, you can't type their name in the live stream chat. You have to type it exactly how it's capitalized on YouTube for some reason. Why? I don't know. I guess the word rant, which is part of this guy's name, ranting, is in his name. You cannot actually type that word on YouTube. There's certain words you cannot type on the YouTube live stream chats. And it's not all for all George Carlin's words.
So you and the rest of the 13-year-olds are having a hard time communicating?
No, more than that. More than that. Are there even any gun live streamers on YouTube anymore, Pat? Probably not.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
They're on Facebook, too.
I'd be interested in see what you can and can't type into their chats.
I have no idea. I usually don't do live streams.
Right.
If I do, I listen. I don't really participate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like there was a news story this week where Chase Bank, do you hear about that tweet?
But what is it, like Britain, where if you like or dislike someone's tweet, the police show up at your house to rescue?
It's not funny. It's not funny. No, it happens.
Scary shit.
Yep. But, no, Chase Bank, they basically did this tongue-in-cheek post where it was like a conversation.
Oh, yeah, I heard it. Yeah.
Where the customer said, well, how do I fix this low balance? You go, they say, don't take Ubers, drink coffee at home, things like that. Chase had to take that post down and apologize for it. Because it was disparaging to poor people. And I'm like, is that bad advice? No, it's not bad advice. You know? But and that's where the world we live in today. And that's as political as I'm going to get.
It's not going in a good direction. I'm sorry. No. I believe in free speech.
Absolutely.
And free speech, you got to take the good with the bad, the bad with the good, and you can't filter it. It doesn't work like that.
Pat, did you happen to listen to the Ask Noah show that Jeremy was on about self?
No, I did not.
Look that up and listen to it. It's good. It's really good and encouraging.
You got 5 minutes, Joel. Did you want to say anything about you were saying that you wanted to talk about say something about Endgame? So you got like 5 minutes before I gotta start wrapping this up.
Have you seen it yet, Pat?
No.
Do you care if it's spoiled?
I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Hold up. I care. I'll drop off.
Okay.
All right. See you, Joel. Talk to you guys later.
So Endgame was freaking awesome. I thought it was awesome.
It was a fast 3 hours.
It was, wasn't it?
It was.
And I managed to not have to pee during it. And how did I do that? I bought a smaller drink than I normally would buy.
You didn't bring the bottle inside and pee out your seat?
Yeah.
Put a catheter in there. There are
the truck driver.
As I'll say, there are sequences in there that if you do go see it, that you could walk out and not miss a thing. You know, if there's battle and action going on, don't walk out. but like early on, like I was gonna say, probably between at the very beginning, not even 15 minutes in. After Captain Marvel brings back
Iron Man and Nebula,
Tony Stark and Nebula, yeah. All right, they all go and find Thanos and find that he destroyed the stones, and then Thor kills him. So then that enters in, well, how do they fix the world?
So, my wife and I have had a few discussions about this since the movie. One of my biggest problems with Endgame is that from that time when they kill Thanos to when they discover they may have an opportunity to bring everybody back is a 5-year span.
Yeah, that's about the only thing I didn't really like about that.
And the question that I asked my wife after the movie was over is, would you bring all those people back after 5 years? And
yep.
Would if you had the opportunity to bring half the universe back, would there be a time, a cutoff time, when you say, no, I'm not going to do that?
Because, well, considering you brought back Peter Parker 5 years later when he should have already been out of high school.
Yeah, because that's kind of one of the problems I have. So what that means then, right, for Peter Parker and Spider-Man is that all his friends were dead for 5 years too, because we got Far From Home.
Or at least
coming
half
out.
Of them.
Yeah, and all his friends, Mary Jane, Flash Thompson, you know, Ned Leeds, Betty Bryan, Gwen, all those people have to have been wiped out because they're in the next movie and they're all the same age in school. Yet,
yeah.
And then the next question is, he's got to be a junior or a senior by now, right? Based upon when Civil War and Homecoming and the Avengers Infinity War came out, he's got to at least be a junior or a senior, right? So, and if Far From Home takes place immediately after Endgame, which is what they're saying, who in their right mind is going to let a bunch of kids go off on a field trip to another country after half the population of the world suddenly shows back up again, where you have, you know, the time period between when they disappeared, when they came back, you've had a catastrophic series of events where the entire economic system would probably have collapsed, and the food and everything. So now you bring all these people back. You don't have a means, you know, their houses, are they still there? Their jobs are gone. You know, is there going to be enough food to feed everybody? All this stuff, you know, all these
things. That's
going to
make those worlds, and are they going to just make it go away with comic book logic? I don't know.
But then again, you know, it's just a comic book too. You know, it's a comic book universe. But I don't, like, if it was a year, if it was 6 months or 3 months, that would kind of make a little bit of, but 5 years and then they're going off to another country to have a field trip? No.
The only reason that it was 5 years is because they wanted to make Tony Stark a daddy.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that too. But it just seems so, and I'm overthinking it. I know that, but
it's like in that 5 year period, all right, Thor is just down on himself and pissed off. So what does he go do? Drink and eat pizza and play Fortnite.
Yeah, that was with Meek and, The Rock
is it
guy.
Korg? Yeah, Korg. I thought it was Korg. Yeah,
Korg. And Meek. Yeah, that was great to see them. I love the cameos, the people that showed up.
See, now the one thing that here's something I was thinking about of Thor in, first off, it does look like he'll probably, you know, when they decide to do Guardians of the Galaxy 3, he'll be a part of the Guardians. Okay?
I hope so.
Because he went on the Benatar, okay? But I'm thinking back to several years ago when the actor that played Thor was the dumbass secretary for the Ghostbusters. And I'm thinking, okay, does this guy want to play more comedy? And is that why this is the way why they had Thor? I mean, granted, it was classic. It was funny. It was great. But does he really want to? Is he just wanting to switch from action to comedy now? I don't know, but you know, because that's. I mean, it just sounds so off the chain for Thor. That's and something completely different. I don't think they've ever done anything like that with Thor before. You know, it was that part was great. I will say, Endgame was by far the funniest of the Avengers movies. Had more belly laughs in the Endgame than I did in any of the Avengers movies, but of the characters that ended up dying, or not coming back, Chris Evans, or Steve Rogers, I should say. You know, he's old now. At the end of the end game. So we know he's not coming back.
I'm interested to see where they go with Loki.
Yep. Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, part of the thing was that when they went to go get the stones, they basically, Ant-Man was released from the quantum realm essentially by a rat.
Yeah, by a rat walking on the keyboard.
All right. So then he comes to the Avengers headquarters. And then they go and try to talk to Tony Stark because he's the only guy who can figure out the time travel stuff. Okay. And, at first Tony didn't want to do it because he didn't want to lose what he had. He was married to Pepper, had his daughter Morgan. And then, I think what triggered it for Tony was him looking at the picture of him and Peter Parker. I think that's what triggered it for him.
Morgan, for him to decide to change about it. The solution and realizing that that's not the kind of person he is, and he can still have to make a difference.
Yep. And of all the people that I thought would probably not want him to do it, Pepper was like, you got to do it. You know? So they go and they figure out the time travel thing. And that was funny, too. You know, like when they tried to send before Tony was helping and Smart Hulk, which was also awesome, I think.
Yeah, they were trying Banner. To figure it out. I didn't see Bruce Banner through the whole at all in the movie.
At all, no. No, just... they're one in the well, no, you actually you did. When they went to go get the yes, when they went to go get the Aya Bagamoto.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, you saw Astral Bruce Banner.
Yes. Because the ancient one pushed him out because we don't have Doctor Strange yet. So, cuz it was 2012. So, but they go through, they figure this out, they get all the stones, they have the huge, and because of Nebula, the past Nebula and the future Nebula were essentially networked, and Thanos found out. And it was just at the beginning when he was just, during the Guardians of Galaxy version, or volume one, when he was starting to look for the stones. So, Thanos and his ship comes in, and there's the huge battle. Captain Marvel gets involved. She wasn't in that much, and if you didn't see that movie, you're not missing anything. For this movie, as far as I'm concerned, except for maybe the end trailer sequence, to figure out why Captain Marvel knew where to go to get Tony. And there was two snaps. One, the Hulk snapped to get everybody back. So he was the first one to use the stones, once they got back the stones. And then, probably my favorite part of the battle sequence, Captain America wielding Mjolnir. He was worthy. That was great, but he also did that in the comic book, too.
Nah, he did it one time. Yeah, it was a fun movie. Yep. It was a fun movie. We gotta wrap this up, because I gotta...
But then the ending, when Tony and Thanos were duking it out, Thanos had the gauntlet and the stones for a brief instant, and I'm still not exactly sure how Tony got them, but he got them. And he uttered the words, "I am Iron Man," and snapped Thanos and his army away. And that was awesome. Unfortunately, it killed him, but That was probably one of the bad things about it. But we already knew Chris Evans and RDJ weren't coming back. This is their last movie. So that's they could have got them away. They could have got rid of them so many other ways, but it just makes me wonder, now Sam and Sam the Falcon is now Captain America. Well, will be Captain America, maybe. I don't know. But, you know, it just makes me wonder what's going to happen in Phase 4. You know, because there's just so much, so many of the original Avengers are gone now, including, unfortunately, Nat is gone, too. Permanently gone. She ain't coming back. So, I guess the Black Widow movie is going to be an origin story.
I guess so. We shall see. We got to wrap this up, man. I got to
Not really, a full one. Just a taste of Endgame. I loved it. Go see it if you haven't.
Yeah, if you haven't, we just ruined it for you.
Yeah, you know everyone who's dead and everyone came in. Although Gamora is the old Gamora, and it's not really in love with Star Lord right now.
We'll let it happen again. All right, here we go. Say goodnight. Well, wait. Here, I'm going to play this out. Here's your promos.
See you guys later.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Jack Attack Podcast. Where chic,
oh dear,
meets geek.
Ones and zeros, ones and zeros, ones and zeros.
Powered by Linux.
Linux.
You by fun. Recorded in Windsor, Nova Scotia. With your hosts, John Watson. And Kelly Penguin Girl.
A girl?
A girl.
A girl?
It's the Jack Attack. That's the J-A-K attack.com. Time well wasted.
Hi folks, this is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint you a fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it for young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was the gym?
It's okay. I ended early because for some reason the arc trainer was on stopped. it didn't stop letting me move my legs, but the computer just stopped. It was weird. And then blinked out and acted like I was starting up again. And I'm like, okay, well, I'll just get off. I wanted to run to the store anyway. I wanted to get some strawberries and I got some salad stuff and some more coffee creamer because I always there's a couple coffee creamers I like that kind of get occasionally get hard to find, so Whenever I'm there, and if I'm running somewhat low, or if I'm down to my next to last one, I'll go ahead and grab a bottle or two more of it just so I have it. So I walked around there for a little bit, and then I had a good walk this morning with the dog. So I've got enough exercise today, but I need to get back on the stick. I didn't go Monday or Tuesday. The last 2 days when I got off work, my head was just throbbing. It wasn't as bad today. I'm starting to wonder if it's allergies. But anyway.
Tell him good night, Joel.
Good night, Joel. We're trying to do a mini vacation soon. I'm hoping to do it before Southeast Linux Fest.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the Hocking Hills is just a really beautiful section of Ohio. You probably drove through some of it on your way from Virginia for Ohio Linux Fest. So there's a whole bunch of cabins down there. And they're, I don't know. I don't really want to say I won't call it expensive because of what you get. It's not just a cabin with heat and air conditioning in a kitchen. It's got everything, dude. It's got bathroom, full bathrooms, everything, it even has a hot tub on the back of the cabin, but they run around. I've seen it as cabins as low as 115 a night to as high as 279 a night. So well, you're going to go down like on a Friday and do the whole day down there Saturday and then come back Sunday morning, I think, just for a little little getaway. And Luke actually asked about going fishing, and I'm like, okay, I'll need to buy a new rod because my rod's been in the garage for 20 years and never been used, and everything's gone on it, so I might as well just go buy another rod. I'll have to buy some new lures and stuff, too. It's been a while since I fished.
20 minutes, Joel talks about 3D printing. Brad said he'd rather hear about CPAPs than printing.
wait, let me see here. Do you follow Joel on Facebook?
I don't go to Facebook much anymore, but I do.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
Maybe not. I don't go to Twitter much anymore either.
All right, so then
I'm on the IG.
I think I'm probably going to be safe if I look at the past week on MeWe, and I don't see any postings, 3D printing postings from him. So I don't know if he has anything to add. Anything more to add? So I'll say 30 minutes.
So yeah, I was betting 33. I was talking to Brad. I'm like, oh yeah, he's going to go for like 33.
How many times is he going to change the subject back to 3D printers?
That's a good one.
And will he have Uber Eats tonight?
Wait, oh gosh, there was a story I saw on... Crap, I know one of the stories I want to talk about.
Wait, does that have anything to do with Uber Eats?
Nah.
Oh, okay. I was like, what does that have to do with Uber Eats and dinner? Where's everybody else?
I don't know. I saw Joel in the listening booth. Oh, Joe's there too.
Yeah, Pat's here, but Pat. Joe, I thought you said Joel.
Hey, Pat.
I'm like, I don't think I've
see Joe and Joel.
Joel, J-O-E, Gorkon.
Oh, maybe it was Joe.
Yeah, hey, I was going to say, he comes in as Gorkon. Wait. This your daughter's a junior, right? Or is she a senior?
She is a junior.
Okay. So you still got another year yet.
Another year where I still can afford to eat.
Well, there's that. How's traffic down
actually,
there?
Actually, it's been good today. But, you know, locally, I'm off of Sand Lake Road on I-4, and it's always a fuster cluck. I mean, it's so bad. Like, let's see, last week was a Tuesday-Thursday week. So Thursday night I drove home, and I went to work on Monday. I don't think I drove – I don't think I left the property here but twice. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, yeah, and I only left once. You know, I didn't go out more than once a day. I just don't want to drive. You know, maybe it's because I got a stick, or stupid tourist driving.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Do you get a lot of tourist traffic through your
area?
If
I could get out on the roof, I could see the fireworks at Universal.
So that's a yes. That's a yes.
Oh yeah.
Now, is your tourist traffic all year round, or is it mostly like summer months?
It hasn't let up. No, it probably is worse in the. I mean, it's probably worse in the colder months because that's when everybody goes to Florida.
Easter is the worst.
Anybody with half a brain doesn't go to Florida in the summer. Only I went to Disney in June. You know,
right. How's my audio?
You're good.
Unless they go to Disney in August, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, I that was the first and only time I went to Disney. I very likely will not go back. And it might just be because I was cooking off, you know.
Wait, you were cooking off?
Yeah, me, you know, like I was bursting into flames.
Oh, I thought you were talking about you like cooking heroin or something. That's why you went in the summer. I was on heroin. That's
cooking
why I
meth,
went to Disney,
you know,
in the summertime. I don't know what I was thinking.
Cooking meth inside the Epcot geodesic sphere.
Oh man,
that could be the title for this episode.
Cooking meth.
Cooking meth at Epcot.
just wait till you can 3D print meth. Huh? that's when Joel will go on for 3 days about the 3D.
When I can 3D print a genetic code that gives me a thick head of hair again.
Do you have to shave your hair? Do you have any hair growth up there?
Oh yeah, yeah. So it's a couple of things. It sucks because I gotta buzz it. And then, you know, I got a couple of, you know, stray hairs in the middle of my forehead where there's nothing else. So I got to like shave them. And then, of course, you got to shave your neck because for some reason, the hair on my neck grows twice as fast as whatever's on my skull.
Better than the hair on your nuts doing that.
You're not going bald. It's just migrating.
Coming out my nose, out my ears.
I get those weird ones that come right out the edge of your ears.
That's TMI, man. Now it's just bad.
Whatever.
You got
dude.
A pubic hair coming out of your ear?
Yeah. Hair's coming out of your ear, yeah.
A friend that I really liked a lot, very kind man. Had hair growing out of his nose, out of the outside of his nose. I was like, huh.
I get it's one mustache. Stray hair that comes out of the side of my nose.
Oh, I get one that comes out towards the center of my nose. It's like a unicorn nose.
That's what she said.
I think I got a hair in my nasal tract somewhere that goes all the way back to my lung because it won't be there, and then all of a sudden I got like a 2-inch hair hanging out of my nose. I'm like, where the frick did that come from? And I pull it out, and it's 3 feet long. I'm like, what the frick?
Yeah, I hear you, man, because I like trim my nose hairs, and then a couple days later, I'm like pulling out ones that I'm like, how did I miss these? And
do you have the weed eater for your
nose? Little ones, you get those little. You gotta get one of them battery powered trimmers.
The weed eater
that has the it has the nose weed eater. I also have.
Yeah, I do that too, and I still my nose hair grows like it's insane.
No, I'll get that random ear hair from like the center of the ear canal that's like sticking out.
That's old age, man. It sucks.
Getting old fucking sucks.
Yeah, hair's coming out of everywhere.
Can I talk about my aches and pains now?
This is exciting.
Sure. Yeah, definitely talking about mine.
Oy, oy, oy. Yeah, I just came from the gym, so
Oh, good for you, Joel.
How many push-ups you do at the gym, Joel?
I don't do no push-ups. I do cardio, dude.
What do you mean you don't do no push-ups? How are you going to get big and strong like me? Oh, you're already big.
I push up to get out of bed, okay?
I taunt Joel. I text him. I do 100 push-ups. I text him each time I do a set, whether it's 10 or 20. Other than the regular taunting of Joel that I do.
Yeah, you're an asshole, but then you're our asshole, so we know that.
I'm sticking with what I'm good at.
Well, I am printing a lamp design.
Uh-oh, hold on. Wait, how many minutes are you going to talk about that? Because we're taking bets.
I'm trying to meet in his mouth.
I had those last week, dude.
Because I have listeners calling telling me that, you know, you got to stop. They'd rather hear CPAP weekly.
Whatever. And my 3D printer's on the decommissioned list again.
Uh-oh, what'd you do? You clog it again?
No. Well, maybe a little, but I got to relevel the bed again, which isn't a big deal, but I also need to replace the heating element.
Ooh, the hot end?
Yeah, it's just two wires and, a resistor?
Oh, yeah, well, there's the thermistor, you mean.
Yeah, the thermistor, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's I've got the Capricorn tubing, and I've got I printed a replacement for on the top of the extruder, and it has a little hole in there that basically you put a little piece of the Capricorn. Capricorn is just a different, little bit better grade of PTFE. And then that's supposed to help me print the flexible filament better. But
tell us what PTFE stands for.
Something Teflon. I forget off the top of my head.
No, anybody else? Anybody?
Wait, what's the question?
PTFE. What's the actual name?
Polytetrafluoroethylene.
You had to look it up, man.
Who said I did that? Of course I did. Anywho, it's working so well with PLA, I'm afraid to tear it apart. I know I can probably get it working yet, but it's just one of those things where, you know, until I actually have to tear it apart to actually do something to it, I really don't want to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was printing with, glow-in-the-dark filament the other day.
Ooh, yeah, that's a little abrasive.
Yeah, well, the problem was, I guess, that the support structures, it's printing them fairly thin, and this was a fairly large print. I guess they were cooling a lot quicker than everything else, even in the enclosed bed. So they shifted positions, and so the nozzle was batting them around.
Yeah, I've had that happen with my lamp design because I designed the base, and I have these supports that basically hold the top of the lamp up, and I originally had the supports built into the base, but it would go so far up, and then basically those things would start to wiggle and they print, and they just basically failed, so I took them off, and I printed them separately. In fact, I printed two to test it at first, and they came out pretty much perfect. And so I got the rest of them printing right now. And then those I had to actually print them on a raft because they kept I probably tried it with just a skirt, and they kept peeling up on the end, so I basically just did a raft, and that cured that.
Well, I was printing cell phone holders, and they got like a 90-degree overhang.
Yeah, you need support on those.
Yeah, there's no way I can do it without support, but...
Nope. One thing with support that I like, depending on the model, this can work. Try the tree support. It's a little bit easier to remove.
Yeah. I was having a lot of trouble. When I was printing in ABS, it was coming out fine, but removing the support, it left a lot of roughness.
Yeah. Gotta get some files.
Does Cura do tree support?
Yes, it's an experimental.
I'll have to look.
Basically, the first thing I always do when I install Cura the first time is I turn on everything. Because there's just so much good stuff. You get, plus, there's also a plugin for adding custom supports now, which that Cura didn't have before, which is very nice. Haven't really used it too much, but when I do my own designs, I try and design it purposefully. I mean, you can't always do that if you're downloading something off of Thingiverse or if you're just not there design-wise yet. But when I design things, I try and design things as much as possible to not need support, which, because it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Now, I haven't gotten into design yet, but I really want to.
Fusion 360 is good. I've heard people use Blender before, but I said, yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I could figure it out in a year, but no, I'll stick with Fusion 360.
Joe, are you vaping or something?
Oh, I just opened up I opened up a...
No, Joe, every time you hit your microphone, you get like a...
You open up a can of whip ass. No, actually, I'm not vaping right now.
he's got a CBD vapor, so...
Yeah.
Have we actually started the show yet?
No, I've been waiting for you to finish.
All right, go.
Yeah, does this count towards the 30-minute estimate of 3D printing time?
I don't know. That's
no.
A good question.
Not
for Joel. He's got another 30 minutes, man.
No, no, I always got a lot of that. And I actually want to do, at the end of the show, possibly, talk about Endgame.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to spoil it.
All right, well,
how can you spoil it?
Did you see it? Like did everybody else
I don't care. I'm going to go see it Saturday, but it won't spoil it for me, because I'm not a pussy.
I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Then I don't want to ruin it for either of you and tell you who died.
Oh, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
But you can pretty much guess by just looking at which contracts are up. So anyway, 3, 2, 1.